So I'm going to turn over the podium now to Dr. Sekar of Emory to talk about the radiographic abnormalities of these incidentally discovered lesions of the pancreas.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Aarti Sekar. I'm from Emory University, and I'm honored to be here today to discuss a primer to understanding pancreatic lesions on CT and MRI. I have no financial disclosures. My goal is to increase knowledge of the classic imaging features of these pancreatic lesions to improve accuracy of the imaging diagnosis. My outline is that I will discuss the advantages of CT versus MRI, most of the time I'm going to be discussing cystic pancreatic lesions, as these are many of our incidental lesions, and then discuss a few solid pancreatic lesions. So CT has a higher spatial resolution and is the workhorse for staging pancreatic adenocarcinoma. As we can see on this pancreatic protocol CT, we can nicely see this hypo-enhancing pancreatic mass interfacing with the SMA and narrowing the SMV, and we can give very accurate vascular staging. MRI is also good for staging pancreatic adenocarcinoma, but has a slightly lower spatial resolution. It's better for characterizing the liver lesions that we may see, but it's harder to do the vascular staging that we need. CT is also preferred for small enhancing masses, which Ajay is going to talk about later. So these small little enhancing neuroendocrine tumors that we see here, and even this very tiny one over here, you basically would not be able to resolve this on an MRI. So a CT is much better for following these tiny little lesions. MRI is strongly preferred for suspected cystic lesions. So for example, this hypo-enhancing mass in the pancreas here, which is a little unusual for a pancreatic adenocarcinoma. It was not obstructing the duct, and it had some tiny cysts along the edge. And on MRI, we can clearly see that this is a very cystic lesion with multiple microcysts and a lobulated edge and a central scar. So this is a classic serous cyst adenoma. MRI can demonstrate the cyst morphology and architecture. For example, this nice uniform capsule and cystic locules within this mucinous cystic neoplasm. But it also, unfortunately, picks up a lot of pesky IPMNs that we'll talk about later. So CT, in general, has higher spatial resolution and is based on density, whereas MRI can give us a lot more information, for example, about fluid and cysts, fat and iron in the liver and spleen, blood and the enhancement dynamics of the organs as well as focal lesions, and about the biliary and pancreatic duct. I know that it can be very daunting to open up an MRI and see all these different sequences, and the names of these sequences are vendor-specific, so they can be very confusing. There's only a few that you really need to know and focus on. So one is the T2-weighted images. You can tell something is T2-weighted because the cerebrospinal fluid will be bright, for example, here. We can see this bright CSF. And on these T2-weighted images, we'll nicely see the pancreatic duct and be able to characterize cystic lesions. Our T1-weighted images, the CSF is not bright, but we'll be able to see the enhancement dynamics of these cystic lesions to see if there's any enhancing components. The pancreas is very bright on the pre-contrast imaging because of the protein and manganese, and you'll nicely be able to detect, for example, pancreatic adenocarcinomas on these pre-contrast images. The pancreas then avidly enhances and washes out, and different lesions will enhance in different ways. So there's a huge number of pancreatic masses, and Dr. Kubi, ever high expectations, asked me to cover most of these. I'm not going to cover adenocarcinomas, but I will try to cover most of these. Importantly, solid lesions are about 85%, and cystic lesions are only about 15% of all pancreatic lesions, but this proportion is changing as we're discovering a lot of incidental cystic lesions. So we're finding many incidental pancreatic cysts. About 3% of CT scans, 20% of MRI scans, and 24% of autopsies find incidental pancreatic cysts in patients with no symptoms. And malignant transformation is extremely rare. This is from the SEER database, but this is an extremely rare malignant transformation. So accurate diagnosis is key as management varies from doing nothing for benign lesions such as serous cyst adenomas, active surveillance of IPMNs, to surgery for more malignant appearing lesions with enhancement. Unfortunately, radiologists, not to bash my specialty, we're only about 65% accurate in diagnosing cystic pancreatic lesions. So my goal is to improve the accuracy of us working together and increasing our accuracy of diagnosing these lesions. We can do this using three sets of information, the clinical features such as the gender and age, the imaging phenotype, and the EUS results. This is a busy slide, and I'm going to go through these one by one, and I'll show the slide again at the end. But these are the classic features that I look for in these cystic lesions to improve my accuracy in diagnosing them. So starting with IPMN, these are usually in older patients, and they're very common. About 50% are in the uncinate process. Here's an example of a tubular dilated side branch in the uncinate process. They can be tubular or round, and 40% will be multifocal. If you aspirate one of these lesions, the CEA may be elevated. In particular, over 192 has about an 80% specificity for a mucinous lesion. And these have a highly variable tumor biology, ranging from hyperplasia all the way to adenocarcinoma. So we want to stratify the risk using the 2017 Fukuoka guidelines. Worrisome features that you may want to consider an EOS for include a size greater than 3 centimeters, a tiny enhancing nodule, mild dilation of the pancreatic duct, and growth of greater than 5 millimeters in 2 years. So when I'm looking at these lesions, I look to see that they have a tubular nature, such as an IPMN, what the size is, to see if it's greater than 3 centimeters, if it has a mural nodule, and whether or not that nodule is enhancing. High-risk stigmata that may suggest the patient needs surgery include what is seen in this patient, which is actual papillary fronds within the lesion that demonstrate enhancement. This was malignant degeneration in an IPMN. After distal pancreatectomy, this patient actually developed a second adenocarcinoma in their remnant pancreatic head. So this brings up the point that IPMN is a field defect and the entire gland is at risk. So even if you resect one IPMN, you still need to surveil the rest of the gland for IPMNs or adenocarcinoma. Main duct IPMN has a much higher risk of malignancy. And this, we can see an engorged dilated duct that you can trace all the way to the ampulla, or even massive engorgement of the duct and side branches. And you can be very convinced that this is a main duct IPMN. Of course, you always want to exclude the other causes of ductal dilation, including adenocarcinoma and chronic pancreatitis. Here was a case where you have frank engorgement of all of these side branches, but also malignant degeneration with these papillary fronds throughout the gland. Moving on to mucinous cystic neoplasms, these are 98% seen in women, middle-aged women. They're usually in the pancreatic tail, and they have a thick capsule. If you aspirate these will also have an elevated CEA, hopefully above 192. So why do these lesions look the way they do? Well, one of the theories is that embryologically, the left ovary is affiliated with the pancreatic tail and leaves a tiny bit of ovarian tissue in that region. With time and hormonal stimulation, this grows into a tumor, and the key feature is that it has a capsule, which many other pancreatic lesions, such as IPMNs and serous cystadenomas, do not have capsules, and this capsule has ovarian stroma on pathology. This explains why we mostly see these in females, why they present in middle-aged females, because it takes a lifetime of hormonal stimulation to get to the point where they would be symptomatic, and why we see them in the pancreatic tail or body tail junction. These also have a range of tumor biology. 80% of these will be low-grade tumors with no malignancy within them, and 20% will be high-grade with invasive adenocarcinoma, and the clues for us are true enhancement within these lesions. These low-grade tumors can mimic pseudocysts, and in fact, we almost called this a pseudocyst when it came to our conference, because there was a questionable history of pancreatitis. The clues that this is actually an MCN is that we have a claw sign with the pancreas. The remainder of the pancreas looks normal. The patient did not have a very good convincing history of pancreatitis, and it's a very round, nicely demarcated lesion. In contrast, pseudocysts tend to be more oblong-shaped and can even have heavy calcification in the wall. And when dealing with necrotizing pancreatitis, you can even get a very complex lesion of walled-off necrosis, but this internal debris won't have the structure that we see in those malignant MCNs, and they will not have internal enhancement. And the key here is you want to have a true history of pancreatitis, preferably documented by prior imaging and labs. This is just my Brady Bunch picture of multiple mucinous cystic neoplasms. You can see they were all rounded, well-circumscribed lesions with a capsule at the body tail junction or in the tail of the pancreas. This one had non-enhancing nodules in it. Each of these was resected and came back with low-grade dysplasia. So there's a shifting paradigm when treating these lesions and with possible observation for these small lesions that we detect, especially as the patients are older and poor surgical candidates. Moving on to serous cystadenomas, these are microcystic lesions or honeycomb lesions. These have no capsules and multiple tiny little cysts. They can have enhancing septations and a central scar. The endoscopic fluid is not usually that helpful, but the endoscopic appearance is usually very characteristic, and you'll see a honeycomb or sponge-like mass. These lesions are multiple cysts lined by cuboidal cells producing serous fluid. So they're filled with serous fluid. But these septations actually have rich vascularity within them and can avidly enhance. One important feature is that there's no capsule, so you get this lobulated border that's very different than what we saw with the mucinous-cystic neoplasms. 30% will have a central scar, and you can see that all of these septations, as well as the central scar, demonstrate a significant amount of enhancement. You could see how this could easily be mistaken for a solid enhancing pancreatic mass, but the T2 weighted images is the key, and this is a classic appearance for a microcystic serous cystadenoma, which needs no further follow-up as a benign lesion, unless the patient has symptoms. This is also why it's more difficult to detect all these microcysts on CT, because there's all these tiny enhancing septations. Serous cystadenomas are always benign, even when obstructing the pancreatic duct. The central scar can be fibrous and collagenous and cause this kind of obstruction. Here we have this dilation of the pancreatic duct due to the serous cystadenoma. That does not mean there's malignant transformation, and many pathologists believe that there is actually no such thing as malignant transformation of a serous cystadenoma. An important variant is that 10% of these are oligocystic. Here are two cases that were resected at our institution that we thought were possibly IPMNs, and they came back as oligocystic serous cystadenomas, so this was a learning case for all of us. Some of the clues are that they have a lobulated edge, and they have baby cysts hanging off along the edge. Here was another case. I became convinced this was an oligocystic serous. It came back as an IPMN. The moral of the story is that there is an imaging overlap between some of these IPMNs and oligocystic serous, and you can raise the possibility and possibly go for endoscopic sampling. And very rarely, a serous cystadenomas can be solid. We're not going to be calling these prospectively. I would usually have said this is a neuroendocrine tumor, but just so we know that these exist, so if the biopsy comes back serous cystadenoma, we know that there's the solid variant. And RCC metastases can also be avidly enhancing and go to the pancreas, so this would also be in the differential. Briefly about cystic neuroendocrine tumors, these are rare. It's just good to know that they exist. I think about these tumors when I see a cystic lesion that has some unusual enhancement pattern. So for example, when it has this thick rind of enhancement here. So here are a few cystic neuroendocrine tumors. This was a cystic lesion. It looked a little bit like maybe an IPMN, but it has a thick enhancing rind here. This is not the classic malignant degeneration pattern of an IPMN, so this was a cystic neuroendocrine tumor. Here's another cystic lesion. We thought maybe this was a mucinous cystic neoplasm. It's round, it's in the body tail junction, but it had this smudgy internal enhancement, which is also not usually what happens with an MCN with malignant degeneration. This was a cystic neuroendocrine tumor. And finally, here was one with enhancing septations, body tail junction. I would have thought this looked very good for a mucinous cystic neoplasm. It has a nice capsule, but this was in an older male. So I gave the differential. This could be the rare MCN in a male, or this could be a cystic neuroendocrine tumor, and this was a cystic neuroendocrine tumor. Doesn't matter. You can give the differential. Either way, it's a surgical lesion. Finally, solid pseudopapillary neoplasms. These are usually seen in young women, but can be seen anywhere in the gland. When they're small, and we're finding more of these smaller pseudopapillary neoplasms due to the incidental nature that we're finding many of these lesions, when they're small, they're actually fairly solid appearing with vague enhancement, but as they become larger, they become very cystic with enhancing components along the edge. The reason they do this is because they have papillary fronds with delicate vascular channels, and as they outgrow these vascular channels as they're growing, they tend to bleed centrally and become more fluid, have more fluid and hemorrhage centrally. This does not mean they're aggressive, and that's not usually due to necrosis, it's just due to outgrowing these vascular fronds. Here's a nice example of a Spend tumor. We can see these pseudopapillary fronds along the edge and a central cystic component. On T1 pre-contrast images, it was bright, so this was blood. And on post-contrast images, these fronds demonstrated enhancement. So these are our pseudopapilla, and this is our central fluid and hemorrhage. Just briefly, solid pancreatic masses. I'm not going to go into adenocarcinoma, but we'll briefly discuss autoimmune pancreatitis and a few of the hypervascular lesions. Autoimmune pancreatitis can present as a diffuse sausage appearance of the pancreas. We lose our normal acinar pattern. It looks expanded. It can be hypoenhancing and mimic an adenocarcinoma. One of the keys is that often you see a beaded pancreatic duct going through the lesion, such as right here. And no self-respecting adenocarcinoma would let a pancreatic duct go through it. So that's a clue that this is autoimmune pancreatitis. It can also present as a focal mass and mimic adenocarcinoma, and this is where it gets more confusing. So we see this focal hypoenhancing mass here, but atypically it's not obstructing the duct, and there is somewhat of a sausage appearance to this pancreas. We also saw that there was some biliary dilation, maybe there was a met obstructing a bile duct, but that there was also retroperitoneal fibrosis. So the clue here is multi-organ involvement. So even if you have a hypoenhancing mass, if other organs are involved, start thinking about autoimmune pancreatitis. Just one more example of autoimmune pancreatitis. This was a sausage appearance of the pancreas. The bile ducts appeared pretty normal. What we missed was these unusual renal lesions that you can see in an IgG4 disease. And 6 months later, you can see that things have progressed. The pancreas is now even more atrophic. That you've got almost a pseudocholangiocarcinoma going on in the biliary tree. This is IgG4 cholangiopathy, and the renal lesions are more extensive. Neuroendocrine tumors, which one of our colleagues will discuss later, have a wide range of tumor biology, ranging from well-differentiated to poorly differentiated tumors, functional and non-functional. I'm just going to discuss some of the very basic imaging features. They can be very tiny or larger, but one of the characteristic things is they often have very avid enhancement. They can have calcifications and become very large, bulky tumors. And here was a mass basically involving the entire pancreas and with liver metastases. You'll notice this one looks a little bit different, and that's because 10% of neuroendocrine tumors can be hypoenhancing. So just because this was hypoenhancing, I'm not going to start thinking about an adeno. It's a very bulky tumor. It had some calcifications. This is most likely a neuroendocrine tumor. A new nuclear medicine study that can help significantly confirm this is a DOTATATE imaging scan. So sometimes we'll use Octrea scans and sometimes DOTATATE. In this case, the DOTATATE scan confirmed that this was a neuroendocrine tumor and that these very tiny lesions in the liver that we wouldn't be able to biopsy were also FDG avid and were metastatic disease. The resolution is higher. It can go down to 7 millimeters for a lesion and even smaller than that if it's very metabolically active. And it has a higher affinity for certain somatostatin receptors. My final lesion is this one in the pancreatic tail. It's kind of T2 bright. It showed enhancement in it. And the differential here would include a neuroendocrine tumor, but also an intrapancreatic splenial and an RCC metastasis. It's following the spleen on most of the sequences, so I think that this is a splenial. And I can confirm this using a sulfur colloid scan, which lights up in both the spleen and the splenial. So in summary, CT has a higher spatial resolution and is excellent for staging of pancreatic adenocarcinoma and following or picking up small little neuroendocrine tumors. MRI is strongly preferred for cystic lesions to show us the architecture and duct involvement. We discussed side branch and main duct IPMNs where you want to use the Fukuoka guidelines to stratify your risk. Mucinous cystic neoplasms, of which the characteristic thing is a capsule, and this is seen in middle-aged women in the pancreatic tail or body tail junction. Pseudocyst, which you want to have a strong history for pancreatitis or necrotizing pancreatitis. Serous cyst adenoma, which have lobulated edges and no capsule and may have a central scar and pretty avid enhancement. Cystic neuroendocrine tumors, which can have a thick enhancing rind or vague internal enhancement. And solid pseudopapillary lesions that have pseudopapilla and internal fluid and hemorrhage. For solid lesions, focal autoimmune pancreatitis can mimic an adenocarcinoma, or it can be more diffuse sausage appearance of the pancreas, and the key is multi-organ involvement. Neuroendocrine tumors can be small or large and bulky and usually demonstrate avid enhancement, although 10% are hypoenhancing, and you can use a DOTATATE scan to confirm. And finally, don't forget about splenials. These can be mistaken for neuroendocrine tumors. Thank you. This is my summary slide of the cystic characteristics, and this is my email address if you'd like to any of these slides.